Episode 103. Yeah, we're getting old. 103 here of the Cherokee Rewind. I am so glad you're able to join us. My name is Mick, as you well know. This time around, we're going to go back and cover a few years here. Back around the turn of the century. And this guy was a part of, he was a part of a lot. You know, the national championship team as a young kid. Didn't play a lot, grew up basically in front of the eyes of the Tam O'Shanter, you know, I mean, at Tam O'Shanter growing up, played, I think, I'll ask here in a little bit. I remember him number seven, played for Toledo. His name is Adam Fish. And, I tell you what, Adam, it's, you know, I was trying to remember. You know, again, I always try to remember jersey numbers, and yours was pretty easy. And again, that, a lot of it has to do with the farther back I go, the better I am with jersey numbers, and especially the championship team, because, you know, that's the championship team. So you always remember that. But the thing I remember too, you played primarily defense, didn't you? Or did you play up front? I can't remember.
Well, first of all, Mick, thanks for having me. This is an awesome thing that you do. I'll probably say that a couple times here today.
Worries.
And number seven, that was kind of my number for all 3 years. I know we'll probably dive into all three. And yeah, you know, I kind of bounced around that first year, the championship year, was mostly forward and playing center. I did find some old documents in a hockey folder, and yeah, you know, I was about every other game player. I was second youngest. Brandon Meisner was 1 year younger than me, and was basically a center that first year. And the cool thing was, you know, they had these awesome stats that the Cherokees used to give me, and I was, you know, 70%. Took the majority of the draws, but yeah, I loved playing center that first year. And then for the next couple of years, like I said, I know we'll dive into them, but it was kind of wherever coach needed me. I mean, I could play either, but yeah, it was one heck of a ride. I know we'll probably talk a lot about the national championship team, but yeah, it was definitely a good 3 years in Toledo that I'll never forget.
Yeah. Tell me first off, let's talk a little bit here about the start for Adam Fish. You're born, if I'm trying to remember, was it Elkhart, Indiana?
Yep. Elkhart, Indiana. Yep. Just east of South Bend, right near Notre Dame, about 20 miles east of there. My dad grew up in hockey and kind of got me involved. He coached me all the way up through till like I was 14-ish. Started playing high school my sophomore year in South Bend. Didn't go as quite as I thought it would. And it was a little bit different. And so then my junior year, I left and played midget AAA. My first time leaving away from home at 16. I played in Milwaukee, Wisconsin for a team called the Pettit National Selects. I don't know if they're even around anymore, right in Milwaukee. Had a housing family, went to high school out there. That was very, very, very different. And then my dad was involved at the Tam O'Shanter in the USA tryouts they have for the Mid-Am District. And that's where Scott Searing was a big part of that, those tryouts. And then my dad said, why you should try out for the Toledo Cherokee. And I had no idea going into those tryouts for the Cherokee that what had happened the year before until I got on the team. I'm the second youngest. And then, you know, you got a guy, I know we'll talk a lot of different guys on that year, but a guy like John Avink, that was I don't even know the words to describe his leadership. Just was, I don't even know the word, but, for those guys to come back the next year and do and kind of set out, you know, hey, we got runner up the year before. Hey guys, you know, let's really let's work hard and you know, just the dry land training that I can remember was just out of this world, like nothing I had ever seen before. It was pretty eye-opening for me, but I was straight out of midgets and just taking it all in from all these guys. It was just so different back then. It was just so, so different. But it was, like I said, it was a great ride.
Yeah. So when you first started, I'm trying to, you know, still think about hockey in Indiana. You know, I mean, obviously on a professional level, you had the minor league teams, obviously with the Fort Wayne Comets. Were there more, especially in Elkhart being there by Notre Dame, which I'm still jealous of because I grew up an Irish Buckeye. I grew up, I watched the Buckeyes on Saturday. And then if we couldn't get a Notre Dame game, we'd watch the Sunday morning Notre Dame replays with Lindsey Nelson and Paul Orning. They were like it was like the Irish game in 60 minutes, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of, not a lot of hockey around here. That's why I said, my sophomore year, I played 1 year of high school and I was like, man, I think I can just get more out of myself. And we looked around for midget teams, nothing really that close to here. And they had a team in Milwaukee and I went out there and I got on there. I was assistant captain and I felt that was kind of my calling and the season was okay. And then, like I said, that summer I went out and, tried out for this team called the Toledo Cherokee that I had never heard of. And
now just real quick, before we go into Toledo, I want to talk a little bit about Milwaukee. I mean, you're an assistant captain. What was it like for you being that it's your first year away from home, going to a high school where you know nobody? It had to be an interesting transition for you. Do you remember anything as far as how did you fit in? How did you, you know, both on the ice and in high school?
Yeah, that's a great question, right? Like I'm 17. I remember my mom like bawling her eyes out when I left and, her only son leaving away from home. And yeah, it was very tough. It was very tough. You had to be very outgoing. And to learn, I mean, I was coming from a school that we had 400 here in Indiana and I went to a school with about 2,000 kids. Oh. And it was very, very eye-opening. You go to the lunchroom, you know, nobody. Same with the kids that you're getting ready to play hockey with, you know, nobody. I lived with a kid and I went to his high school and he played on our team the team that in Milwaukee and tried to meet his friends. And so it was very, very tough, but that made me a little easier that next year when I came to Toledo, and they said, hey, we're going to put you in a house with a housing family. But that first year, so I would have been my senior year. I had just turned 18, again, second youngest on the team. So I had to finish high school. So I went to Adrian High School, which is kind of right near the border there. Mm-hmm. A lot of stories about trying to get to practice that I can remember, because practices back then were, I want to say, Tuesday and Wednesday at like 4 o'clock.
Okay.
So yeah, I don't know if any of the other guys had mentioned that, but you know, you get out of school at say 3:15, and you got to go a half an hour to practice. You're getting there 15 minutes before practices, and then Thursdays were Thursday night practices, so those weren't too awfully bad. But going into a school, Adrian High School, my senior year, I was a little. I'd been used to it. Adrian High School is very big. It's probably got another like 2,000 like the year before, so I was used to that. I didn't know anybody that year. I lived with a lady. She was actually a teacher at the school. Mm-hmm. On the Cherokee, like I did the year before in Milwaukee. So that was, but I was used to it. So that was my senior year. And that was the year of the good old national championship run that we had, which was amazing.
Well, let's talk here about what it was like for you to, you know, come into Toledo, the tryout process. I want to talk a little bit here about what it was like when you first came in, and you said you knew nobody. Your second youngest kid on the team, you and Mize. Of course, Meisner was probably also, he was the shortest guy on the team. That guy cracked me up. He was 5 foot nothing, to quote Rudy, 5 foot nothing, 100 and nothing. But that kid played like a beast, especially in the corners. He was fearless and he played like a maniac and got under kids' skin and would draw penalties. Oh man, that kid, he was so good at that. And I mean, he was just the most unassuming kid. When you saw him off the ice, you're like, he's a hockey player? But he was a doggone good one.
No, I mean, we're the two youngest, so we kind of, I don't remember us sticking together, but I was just kind of taking it all in. Like I said, I was about an every other game player. That first year I maybe had 10 goals, maybe 10 assists. And looking at the stats, I had two fights. Do I remember them both? No, I remember one. I remember a guy butt-ending me in the ear for Motor City, and he started skating away, and I slashed him in the back of the legs, and he turned around and dropped his gloves, and my mouth about hit the floor, and I go, "Oh no!" And that's all I remember. I remember wearing a necklace, and it was all over the ice. To say, I mean, I probably got in two fights a year, if that. I was more of the finesse guy rather than the fighter, but we had plenty of those on that 97, 98 team. For sure, for sure. Brad Coombe was just the name that I remember. I mean, a guy like Andy Thiessen, I think he led the team in penalty minutes. I mean, but were we the team that always fought? No. But back then it was different, where when you got up by five or six goals that year, which we always did, we only lost two or three games. And if here comes the third period, why not fight? You only got an EJ back then. You only got thrown out for that game. So why not? So it's just different times. Now it's all different, right? So
Oh yeah, now my God, you got to go in front of a tribunal or something, you know? It's like it contrib it like make contrition. Oh, I'm so sorry. You know, that's crazy. How the game has changed, man. Of course, you know, with the advent of the internet, that's what makes it so. That's why it's so, like, oh my gosh, he looked at me. Oh, penalty. You know, kind of crap like that. But now, when you played there, do you remember, like, were you nervous, like anxious, kind of, what am I doing here, type of feelings at all? How long did it take you to kind of settle in to your role and what you were doing when you were playing with Toledo?
I played there for it had been 3 seasons. I guess you'd call it 98, 99, and 2000. That first year, like I've said here a couple times, it was just, second youngest, just kind of watching everybody, every other game player playing center. I always tried to win the draw, because I was actually pretty good at winning draws. So I mean, if that's your part, do your part. Probably fourth line player, third line maybe some nights, but probably all fourth line that year at center. Nervous, I would say. Yeah, a little bit. But you had senior guys, right, that had all been there before. And like I said, John Avink was he the best player on that team? Absolutely not. But was he the most inspirational? And was he the captain? Absolutely. Look at what he does now, right? He's an int like he's a speaker. So I mean, it kind of fits, right? But some of the better player, I mean, Neil Price sticks out, right? Won all the national championships in college. I don't even know who led the team. I probably have that here on this stat sheet, but you mean Kalemeyer was up there, Lahovey, Marchand. So you had a lot of guys on that team, and it was just an effort by everybody. And I know I listened to one of these Kalemeyer the character he is. And I think I listened to his whole podcast, and I'm surprised of a story that did not come up of the water bottle incident. Has that come up on any podcast?
I think it depends, though. I know we've talked about it a couple times, and I'm trying to remember which one it was. Was it the one where they threw it and it hit the general manager, Mike Robertson?
No, I don't remember that one. I remember, so if you didn't want to take, if you were the defenseman of the other team in front of our bench, you never wanted to be on the bench side because you would get a squirt from somebody on the bench from the water bottle. That was the first incident that I remember us doing a lot. And then there's an incident where we're at TAMO, we're up big, and I probably play in Motor City. And I'm still involved in hockey now, and I'm sure we'll get into that.
Yep.
But this is the craziest thing I've ever seen. Mike Kollmeyer scores, turns around to the goalie, and drinks his water bottle, and all heck breaks loose.
Yep. Yes, we did talk about that. I think, played on the year before he played. I think Steve Litke, I think, was the guy that told me about that. With Kellemeyer, but it was, but we talked about, well, of course, Kelly played, 4 years there, as a overager. So he was, he did a lot of crazy stuff, but yeah, we did talk a couple times about that because the year before you got there, again, he was a goofball extraordinaire, but he played on a team that was like that, just like the 98 team was. The 97 team was probably even crazier. They had Rob Kroll on there. Crowley, of course, during the third period of Gold Cup, where they're literally like not winning and they're trying to catch up, and they had to win that game just to make it to the national tournament, and which was being held in Toledo that year. And he goes over there and does the slap shot where he goes across the Motor City bench. And this is in Hurster Cup or Gold Cup back then, not during a regular season game. He goes across the bench with his stick and catches everybody in the head as he goes by, and just, that was them. They had that personality. And the 98, and I always said this, Adam, and I believe this to be true. The 98 championship team, as great as they are, and they were great, no question. I believe, however, that I thought that the 97 team, I think that was a more talented team. Now, you wouldn't know this because you weren't there, but I'm just saying they were actually a more talented team. But what made the 98 team so special was the chemistry. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You look either side of you, you knew you had your brother and you had his back and he had yours. And even if you didn't always like each other, brothers love each other, but sometimes brothers fight, that's just how it is. And the idea that you will go and do what you need to do to get it done and not, in other words, you row in the boat in the same direction, to quote one DJ Fleck. But it's fun to know that you can do that stuff. And know that it will, the chemistry will take you a long way in how you do things. And of course, team chemistry is a big thing when it comes to try and contend for a national championship, let alone winning it. That was a big part of your guys' success, was it not?
I agree. We're probably going to talk a lot about John Avink like I have, but I mean, just the chemistry. I remember, the dry land trainings, like I said, were it was just insane how all these guys just, we had a common goal, and that goal that year was to win it all. And, the leadership team of the team was like, hey, we were here before. We got one game away or one shot away from winning the whole thing. Like, we can do this again. And that's where I kind of just, got on the wagon there and just all these leaders. Everybody was kind of their own little leader. But with John Avink kind of leading the way was just an unreal thing. I can't say it on here, but some of those guys that year, there was an F, a T, and an A on their sticks, an FTA. Unfortunately, I can't say what that meant, but it was kind of that mentality of just do anything at any cost to win. And that's what that FTA stood for. So,
well, I was going to say it probably stood for, you know, F the a-holes, I'm guessing.
F them all. Yes.
Yep. Close enough.
Yep.
So, yeah. So I gotcha. That's right. You know, and yep. You're right. You need to have a unifying mentality to go in to do what you guys did. And it's funny because, you know, like I said, the chemistry on that team was so good. It was so good because, I mean, you had guys like you. You also had another young defenseman, if I remember. I believe he wore 24, maybe, John Jepson.
Yep. Yes. Yep. Yeah. The defense crew on that, I mean, the whole team, I didn't play defense that year at all, I don't think, but just the defenseman. Yeah. I mean, who was the Rob Kurt? Rob Kurt, you know, he went into the military after that, I believe. He tried out for some minor pro teams and things like that. But, you know, he would drop the gloves. I mean, this guy was 6'2 plus, just like Brad Coombe. But yeah, the defense group was amazing that year. And, you know, if some younger kids hear this, that team, and you know, what you could take away from that team is there's a lot of things, but, we never had our own locker room. We were in a youth rink. We had to carry our bags to the rink. And then the other big thing, like nowadays, everybody has their own locker room. I know the Toledo Cherokee now do. And the other big thing that some people would kind of laugh at was the music before the game. I don't think we ever listened to music before the game. Did that have something to do with the chemistry of the team? I would say absolutely. Were we always talking hockey? No, but boy, the guy next to you and the guy across the room, you'd be talking. You're not listening to the music and you can't hear yourself think. So when I see teams now listening to music before the games, it kind of makes me smile and go, why don't you turn the music off and talk to the people in the locker room?
I agree with you there, man. I understand the purpose of it. It's to try, you know, they believe that it pumps them up and gets them going, you know, for the game and stuff, thinking about the game individually. But yeah, the crosstalk and stuff during that time, you know, when you're all together, you know, because usually when you're broken up into your little groups, when you're off the ice and stuff and you talk, that's one thing. But to talk as a team across the locker room to each other, I think that's becoming a lost art, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly. So I know you always ask, you know, your first goal. But again, back then, like, I don't remember us getting the puck for guys in their first goal. Like, that was just, I don't remember it. I can tell you from this stat sheet, and I just looked at this the other day for the first time in 20-some years, I scored in my first game in juniors. I didn't know that until I looked at this stat sheet, and then I scored in my second game ever. So do I remember it? Absolutely not. Over 20-some years ago, but yeah, it was that was a crazy, crazy year, that that championship year.
Yeah. So now, did you have to go through any kind of like rookie initiation or anything like that when you were there?
Man, that was, you know what? I was trying to remember that, and I don't really remember a lot of that going on. And I would definitely tell you, I will tell you, as I got to be the senior guy the next year, which would be the 99. And then my last year, the 2000 year, did I partake in some crazy stuff, I will tell you absolutely. But my rookie year, that national championship year, I don't remember. The only thing I remember is the hair. And I do have a funny story about the hair. I don't know what year it was, the first or second or third year, but we worked at a sporting goods store. And they had it was me, and that was probably my second year. I don't think that was my first year. It would have been my second year. Me and a couple guys worked at a sporting goods store, and the management had to come together because customers thought we were like sick because of how blonde our hair was. Because back then, like, nobody had seen that, so it was very it was interesting, and it was very funny. Me and Nick Billenow was the second year. I believe he was the captain of that team that second year that I was there, which would have been 99. Mm-hmm. And I think it was me and a guy named Ashley Aragona, which he was actually my roommate.
Wow.
Yeah. And us three worked at the sporting goods store. And that's the only really rookie initiation that I remember that I could probably talk about on the air here. All the other ones were done like on the bus or in the locker room, those type of things. But the hair thing, all dyeing your hair blonde, I think we met and we didn't know what we were doing. Like, we had no idea what we were doing, but we would meet at a house and all get blonde hair dyed out. I believe we met at the Robertsons. Okay. Mike and Diana Robinson's house. I think there's some pictures floating around there. And we would all dye our hair blonde, and it was very weird looking, to say the least.
Well, yeah. But now when you were able to, you talk about some of this crazy stuff that you guys did. Oh, you know what? I wanted to ask you before I forget. Ashley Aragona, didn't he be, I think he was from Dallas, wasn't he? He was from Texas.
Yeah.
Which is kind of,
he's like a doctor or dentist or something now, yeah, I think. Yeah.
Yeah, he's a dentist now. And that kid could talk and talk.
Yes.
And talk.
Yes. Yeah. I actually lived with him in an apartment. I don't know if they do that now anymore, but we had an apartment. There was two apartments that year. Me and a guy named Mike Pinkowski and Ashley Aragona, we were roommates, and yeah, that was quite the thing. I guess the only story there that you might find funny is we ate out a lot because we didn't know how to cook, and we actually let our kitchen get like out of hand, and we like never did dishes for 2 or 3 months. And that's kind of how like I am the way I am now. Like, I'm kind of like a neat freak almost. So if my wife ever listens to this, now she'll know the real reason of why like a clean kitchen. Mm. It's because of that, kind of giving me flashbacks of not cleaning the kitchen for 2 or 3 months. Was pretty interesting, to say the least. And the coaches used to come over to that apartment, and the crazy things that happen in an apartment with some guys that are 19 years old was pretty crazy. And the coaches back then, all the little guys' name, help me out, the Kurt Ludwig.
Yeah, Luddy, yep.
Ludwig, he would come over. I don't think Searing ever came over, but probably Omi and Ludwig came over a few times just to check on us. And the good thing about that was you had to buzz the buzzer to get in. Mm-hmm. And so we had about 60 seconds, right? Yeah. Hey, this is Coach here. Okay, clean everything up. And yep. Then we let them in 60 seconds later, and they would come up. And, thank goodness they never opened the closets. They kind of just looked around and kind of said, how are you guys doing? And left. So, but I know we'll probably talk about coaching staff here. Eventually. Mm-hmm. But Scott Searing, oh my gosh. I played a lot of sports in high school. Went to a pretty predominant football school here in Northern Indiana.
coach by the name of Bill Sharp. He's in the Indiana High School Hall of Fame as one of the best coaches in Indiana. And, you know, I relate him to Scott Searing. These guys are just leaders. You know, Scott Searing would be a guy that would never, I don't remember ever him yelling. You know, some of these guys yell at the top of their lungs now. He was just very, he had just one-liners. And, you know, I just, some stories of his coming into the locker room, like before the national championship game or before the Gold Cup game, just some of these stories of him just trying to get you pumped up were just unreal. Can I remember him? No. So those three coaches, Omi, Searing, and Ludwig, like they had a good grasp of, you know, like bad cop, good cop. And yeah. It was just, can't say it enough about Scott Searing and his coaching ability to get us all on the same page.
I just remember, you know, you talk about good cop, bad cop, and about in the locker room, you know, national championship, the stories that I remember are, you know, I remember I think we were down in the first period in the national. Yeah. And so Scott came in and I remember, I think it was Kelly. I think it was Mike Kellemeyer who told this story too about, and I know a couple of the guys did, that they talked about how instead of coming in, you know, everyone was expecting him to come in and basically blow the roof off the place and tear him a new one, you know, because of the way they played in that first period and the fact that they were down. And he came in there and did the exact opposite. He was like pumping them up saying, you know, hey, you did this real well and you did that real well. We need to do this and that and the other thing. Just real super positive. And it changed, you know, when he left the room, everyone was kind of like, what? And it pumped them. You know, it was kind of like that reverse psychology. Because that's the thing with Scott. I mean, I've told this in other podcasts. And I still hold to it. Back then, you had three guys. You had the good cop, who was Todd Omi. You had the bad cop, who was Bob Zion. And then you had the staff psychologist, who was Scott Searing. You know, and the three of them, as different as they were, yep, they made that thing work. It was, again, chemistry. It was so strong with the chemistry that the three of them had. They all brought something to the table that made it work. And
yeah,
weird as it sounds, it was perfect. It made it work, and they all got rings now to prove it.
Yeah, I totally agree. You know, you brought up another name, Bob Zion. I went through my hockey folders this weekend, and I found the books that we used to do. And I don't know if any of your other podcasts talked about, we used to go upstairs at Tam O'Shanter, right outside the bar, if they still have that at Tam O'Shanter.
Yeah, it's still there.
Okay, and there used to be a conference room right off that. And Zion used to run, I don't know if we did it every week, but I would say it was every month. And we would have, like, it was like a school session. And I don't know if teams still do this, but he would hand out all kinds of stuff, and I still have it here in my folder, just all kinds of articles. I mean, the guy was just, like, a magician at finding all these articles and trying to get all of us together on the same page was just amazing. And like I said, I don't know if teams do that anymore. But you know, he was the goalie coach. But he was a guy to say, get down and give me 10 head rolls. I don't know if that's came up in any of the podcasts, but, I can tell you that I did a lot of head rolls, all 3 years, a lot of head rolls. And the other thing I wanted to point out was, you know, it's totally different, right? Like juniors now is not juniors back then. You know, in the Central States back then, I believe there were six teams, you know, or seven teams, and we played each other five, six times. You know, we went to St. Louis once. We flew to St. Louis back then. And that was a riot. That's a whole nother chapter of a book. And then we always started off in Essex, Ontario back then. That was our first game. And that was to see who was a man. or a big boy, because when you went up there, I don't know how many fights there was, but it was to see who was who and who would kind of make the Cherokee team. And boy, that was very eye-opening for me. I remember that big time. And then I remember always the good games with Columbus. You know, Columbus was kind of a rivalry after that first year. They always had the better players, and we always had good rivalries with them.
Yeah, I just remember too, you know, you talk about, you know, the going to Essex and playing to start things and stuff. I don't know, you said you had like maybe two fights that first year, and even in subsequent years you didn't really fight much. Who were the guys that I mean, you talked about Rob Curt in that first year and stuff, and we know like Brad Coombe and all those other guys, you know, Scott Williamson took no crap off anybody, and you know, of course Jeppy was just a baby back then, but he still was tough as nails. Who were some of the guys in the second and third year you played that were tough guys that weren't afraid to, you know, drop the mitts?
Yeah, for sure. I think I listened to another podcast, and Max Howell, I think you had him on here.
Ooh, yeah.
He had mentioned my name in his podcast. So I think it was, he had mentioned something about training camp that I had said to him after he dropped the gloves at training camp. But, you know, he was a tough, tough customer. So that second year, I started playing defense. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Nick Billenow was the captain that year, and he was a great, great defenseman there. You had Brad Krolak, another great, great defenseman. Mm-hmm. And then you had the kid from Norway,
John Ramon,
another good defenseman. And then probably the fight leader that year, which ended up being my partner, which was very, very funny, was Casey Welch.
Yeah.
And wow, was he he was definitely a hard-nosed dude. And then some of the forwards that year, Jeremy LaBianca, did I say it?
No, Jeremy LaBianca. Everyone called him
LaBianca.
Omi would call him Loudmouth LaBianca.
Got it.
Yeah.
Maybe he was the one that I heard on your podcast that was talking about me and at training camp. But Scott Cozentine, Scott Johnson, and then John Freeman as a forward. You know, Freeman, I don't know if this has came up. I think you had him on your podcast.
Yes.
But did he talk about the warm-up fight?
The one against Columbus?
Columbus. Did he talk to you about that?
I know we talked about a couple different things. But I know Omi talked about it, you know, when there was no officials on the ice and things kind of got out of hand. And next thing you know, it's a full blown brawl and, you know, fines, suspensions, yeah, and everything else.
Yeah. I don't remember the whole thing. I remember being on the ice, you know, John Freeman, all 6'6", you know, 225 of him. We're playing Columbus. So that's the second year, 99. And it was kind of like in Slapshot. Yeah, Freeman comes across the middle and kind of cross-checks somebody. And here comes everybody to the middle. The refs aren't even on the ice. They're coming on like in their skates, like half-tied. So that was quite something. That's kind of what I remember that second year. That second year, we, 99, we made it to nationals. And then I think – we didn't even make it to the semis, if I don't remember that second year.
Yeah. And you know, John Freeman, and you talked about Max Howell earlier, the pride of Kansas City. The fight he had in training camp was against John Freeman. He said that he goes, the first time I fought, he goes, you know, people were, you know, I heard people tell me that I was a tough dude and this stuff. He goes, I'm going to tell you the truth. He said, I went to that fight when I looked up and got challenged, and I turn around, drop the gloves and look, and I had to look up And all I see is this big 6'5", 6'6" guy. And I'm going, and he goes, I'll be honest. He said, I did all right in the fight. He said, but I was scared out of my ever loving mind. He said, I was shaking. He said, I didn't tell anyone. I didn't let anyone know. He said, but I was shaking in my boots. He said, I was scared. But he made a good accounting of himself in the fight, and the two became friends. And you know that, but that's the big man from Alaska, John Freeman, for you. You know, it's
Exactly.
I think it's great. You know, but now in the now, so who were some of the guys that were, you know, you talk about, you know, some of the crazy stunts you guys pulled in your when you as you got older with the second and third years. Who were some of the guys like in that second year that you, if you remember, that were kind of pretty wacky and that like to mess around, you know, like on the bus or in the hotel room or, you know, wherever you guys played in the locker room too, you know, that kind of stuff. Did you guys have a lot of that go on when you played?
Yeah, I mean, all these guys were wacky, for sure. You know, we haven't talked about Derek Stum at all, but boy was here character. Scott Cosentine and Scott Johnson, those two other guys were probably the kind of the class clowns. But yeah, I mean, Stum, he was just always causing some kind of ruckus, and then you know, Ferenc, if however you say it there,
Parents.
being from Ferenc being from Hungary, he would always put his spin on any everything. When we did fly, I don't think we flew after that first national championship year, but you know, we would tie a dollar bill to a fishing line at the airport. Just all kinds of crazy stuff that we would do walking around or taking the bus to wherever we had to go. Yeah, just really, really good times that national championship year. You know, they flew us out to Los Angeles for the national championship. My whole family actually got to go to that, which kind of made it like a family vacation. I know you've talked about, you know, the internet dial-up back then for the national championship game, and I mean, it was just totally, totally different times back then. But yeah, we had a ton of characters, which leads into that third year, which would have been my final season. And you know, the first year we won it all, the second year we got fifth, and so coming back for a third season, I'm like, let's just finish this out. Before that third year started, I knew that refereeing was something that I really liked to do, and I went to some camps for officiating. And the head guy there named Dan Monticelli,
Yeah, mono, yep.
which actually ref our games, yeah, with Mono back then, actually refed our games. So he came to ref camp and said, "Hey, when you get done playing, you want to ref, just let me know." So that leads me into this third season. A lot of us guys came back, right? Bill and Al came back. Larry Bryant, I think he came back. Meisner's back. Krolak's back. A lot of these guys came back for another season, my third season. And boy, there were some characters on that third season. Probably the heavyweight fighter on the team was Peter Dahlius. And
Good old Dotus.
he definitely would not back down from anybody out there. And then, you know, speaking of Jepsen, then that year we get his brother,
Yeah,
little
Jeff.
Jeff Jepsen, that was 5'5" and 120 pounds soaking wet. So and then this season, the third season was just mediocre at best. I remember getting injured going knee to knee with a guy into some of the last games, and I try the last game in the tournament. Coaches said, yeah, you know, you want to play, you want to not play. You know, they say, we'll win this game, we'll play another game in the tournament, in the Gold Cup. And I said, yeah, let me play. Knee was just on fire the whole game, and we ended up losing. And that ended up being my last junior game of my career. So thank goodness I played that last game. Still have some knee problems here and there, but you know, after that, that started the referee career that I went on to have, which I'm sure we'll talk a little bit about. So,
so now tell me, I want to throw a few names out that you mentioned. We kind of talked about them a little bit, but I want to talk a little bit more about them a little bit. Some of those guys, because it takes me back. I mean, you talked about the guy called Crow, Brad Krolak. That guy, Chicago boy, you know, I never grew to appreciate back then what he did and the way he played. It was later that I really came to appreciate what he did. He was one of those guys that was, again, not the flashiest guy in the pan, but was able to do a lot of things really well. And of course, you know, just a good solid kid who, you know, he was just fun to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. The funny thing is, a lot of these guys went on, Krolak, Billinow, Rico Day, they went on to play at the University of Ohio. And so, like I said, after this year, I started in a thing called the Junior Developmental Program. It's now called something different. But and the beginning ranks of that start off in the juniors and college club. So I ended up reffing these guys at Ohio University, something somebody doesn't know. This would never happen in today's world. So now I'm calling penalties in front of 2,000 people packed house at in Athens at Ohio University, and I'm calling penalties on Krolak and Billinow. So that was kind of, that's kind of the start of the referee career for me right after playing juniors. You know, I started reffing in the same junior league as I played in. And that probably never happened nowadays. That was probably one of the toughest thing in my refereeing career was doing that. Because, you know, they're going to be yelling everything, you know, "Hey Toledo," they always used to call me, "Come on Toledo." And like, it just really got under my skin a little bit, but you know, you learn to deal with that being an official. So,
yeah, you have to, now, my gosh, that had to be weird. I mean, did, when you would ref games like that, like in Athens and stuff, did they give you a lot of crap? Like, you know, as far as, you know, obviously they're going to give you crap no matter what, because you're a referee. But how hard was it for you if like guys that you played with, whether you played with them or against them, that were in the club circuit, how hard was that for you as far as, you know, if they chirped you and you knew them from your time in juniors?
It, you know, people, it's tough because things were different back then, but it didn't even bother me. You know, like you see a penalty, you call it. It's a little different back then because of the standard, right? There was really not a lot of standard back then. So I was a ref that, you know, I like to let them play a little bit. So I didn't let them get away with anything more than anybody else back then. That was a good stepping stone for me. And I don't know if we'll talk about what levels I got to, but that was definitely the grassroots. And then, I worked my way up, the next couple of years into the North American League. And then from the North American League into the USHL, a guy by the name of Scott Brand, ran the officials. Yep. Super great guy. Don't have anything bad to say about Scott. He definitely got me into, the levels that I ended up doing, ended up going full time into reffing, and did 142 games in one season, which was quite a lot. That was my last full time season in juniors, and so what they do there is they put you in all the different leagues to see which one you want to do the next year or get picked up. So ended up doing the Western Hockey League, which is major junior in Canada. Ended up doing, which was the Central League, which was the United League, and then the East Coast Hockey League, my final years of juniors. And really basically was on a plane or in a car or on a train from, I mean, every day of the week. And it was great. The United Hockey League was kind of the bruiser league. The Central League was down in Texas. It was kind of a bruiser league. And then you had, you know, the East Coast Hockey League. So then that next year I decided to get picked up by the East Coast Hockey League. And that was the final season. I did 90 some games that year, and did a couple playoff games. And by the time you're 27, 28, 29 in refereeing, they say you either have it or you don't. Some of my roommates that I lived with reffing, some of those guys ended up making it. And, you know, I said, got a letter that said my services are no longer needed. And it was a great, great career. It was about 9 seasons long, from 21 to, say, 29. Got to see all parts of the country. I got to go into Canada, coast to coast, border to border, and couldn't have done it without my parents, obviously. And it was a great, great thing to do when you were, you know, I wasn't married, didn't have kids. You'd have to do it like that. And I wouldn't take it back for anything. And you know what? You know, this is a hockey podcast, but, you know, the coaching staff of the Cherokee to get me to be the man that I was, I couldn't have done it without them. You know, all of the staff, you know, from Doc McCarthy to Chuck LeMay to the Renegers, just everybody, you know, all started with Doc McCarthy.
Yep.
You know, and the money and everything that he had put down for the organization was just top notch. No regrets for me at all in Toledo.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, do you see yourself maybe eventually getting back in the game, like coaching, getting into doing more stuff at a local level, maybe?
Yeah, so Mick, so I live in Mishawaka right now, which is just a little town right next to South Bend, and I am actually in charge of all the officials. I'm the referee in chief here locally, and I still do ref, just not full time like I used to. I still do some college club, some Division III, and some minor pro, just when I have time. I have a little one, a wife, and a family now, and yeah, my little one's getting ready to start skating, so I do see myself probably getting into some kind of coaching. But refereeing is definitely the passion. I just love being out there involved in the game. But yeah, definitely coaching will probably be in the future with the little one getting on the ice.
Yeah, no question about it. And that's, you know, I mean, that's usually the way you know, it's also a way to give back to the game that gave you a lot, you know, is to be able to, you know, help the future of, you know, of the game.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I try to give back as much as I can in the refereeing world. I teach seminars. I'll teach refs, you know, pretty much everything that I learned. And that's what we were told as we were coming up was, you know, if you ever get a chance to give back, try to give back as much as you can. And I tried to do that at any cost.
Yep, no question. Now, you know, I tell me about how big, because I remember, tell me about how big of an impact it was to have your family there, you know, going through all of this. They were there. You know, your dad, I can remember him so well because he used to sit right by me when I do the games, you know, him and your mom, God bless her souls. I mean, just great people. And, you know, your sister, I can remember her coming to some games and stuff, but I mean, your family, they were one of many that were road warriors, you know, they went to all the games, home and away. And they went out and saw you, and for better or for worse, they were there and saw you through it all. And tell me how important that was for you.
Man, you got me a little choked up, Mick, here. I'm not one to get choked up, but yeah, man, my parents, wow. From the time growing up to taking me to the rink to everything, it was amazing. I just great experience, great memories. You know, like I said, they came out to California. We had a family vacation. My parents came to every game. I can remember my mom and dad getting caught off the side of the road in a snowstorm. They went off the side of the road in a ditch coming to a game. You know, like they would come that 2-hour trip to Toledo from the South Bend area for every single game. That was huge for me. Coming from a little town in Indiana, you know, to a great organization in Toledo, that was just huge. I owe everything to my parents. You know, that was it was great.
Yeah, no question about it. You know, and like I said, I just remember, you know, I'd sit there, and your dad had the best sense of humor. I mean, he did. We would sit there, and he in between periods, you know, he'd walk over, and you know, we'd start, you know, he'd start chirping some stuff, and I'd just sit there and just laugh. I mean, he just like I said, he just had the best sense of humor and stuff. And I remember him trying to remember what he I mean, he would, you know, he had a booming voice, if I remember correctly. You know, and he would,
oh yeah,
he wasn't afraid every now and then to let it be heard across the ice and stuff. And yeah, he just, like I said, you could hear him, and he just cracked me up. And then your mom, I remember her dearly. You know, she was always the more quiet one, more the, you know, she's very, very, very sweet. I loved her to pieces. And you know, your sister was really cool to me too. She was always nice. And I, you know, like I said, I just remember, like I said, every time I seen your mom, she always had a smile on her face. And, you know, dearly missed. And we, you know, wouldn't be as much fun. I always knew when I seen your mom and your dad that everything was all right in the world. You know, it was like, you know, it was a road game. It's like, oh crap, we got to do this and whatever. And it's like, or what, you know, and it'd be like, oh, well, there's the fishes. Okay. You know, it's like, it was always like a balance there, a centering balance. If I saw them, if I saw the Robertsons, or when I saw the Renegers, you know, it was like, okay, we're good. Everything's good. You know, and that's that, they were just an important part of the legacy that is Cherokee hockey. You know, of course, that guy that wore number 7 was pretty good too.
Yeah, I agree, Mick. Yeah, it was a good run. You know, I mean, same for you. You know, we always said, you know, if Mick was there, we got to talk to you. You know, if we were having a bad day, we got to talk to you, and you know, our frown would turn upside down. So it was the same. It was different times back then, and yeah, it was definitely it was a good run for sure.
Yeah, no question. So let me ask you. We'll get ready to wind this up here in a little bit. Tell me, you know, what was some of the more, I don't know, what would you say was probably more some of the more impactful people? You know, you talk about the coaches. I mean, I think about all of them. You know, I mean, we talked about Bob and Todd and Scott. And of course, we had Luddy in there and Mike Witten, just different guys that were in there that were in that era, that were a part of this team. And, you know, that really, I mean, a couple of, you know, like I said, and we go back to chemistry. We go back to chemistry, because a lot of that will impact what kind of experience you have at when you're playing juniors, okay, good or bad. It's a lot of that chemistry is going to dictate what your attitude is, what your the way you approach the game, the way you feel about the game, and you feel about people in general, let alone your teammates. But tell me about how much that played a part in not only your playing time, but in developing your passion to officiate. How important was, you know, those things to help ignite that fire in you that said, "Hey, I wanna wear the stripes."
Yeah, you know, that's very true. Like I said, I can't stress enough the coaching staff. I mean, Omi's been there forever. You know, he was kind of the hard nose, blue collar, you know, get your nose dirty. And then Ludwig, he was kind of the quiet type. He was more of the white collar, you know. So it was and then, you know, just going back to Scott Searing, being probably one of the best coaches of any sport that I've ever had. So all these guys, you know, lead us into our young adulthood as growing into men. And they all had an integral part of that with all of us. And so yeah, that did get me onto, you know, into the refereeing. And yeah, it absolutely helped, right? All this stuff that I talked about helped me get into officiating. And just all the people along the way, like I had mentioned, you know, the McCarthys, the LeMays, the Renegers, the Robertsons. I mean, just everybody back then. I mean, everybody was just top notch. You know, McCarthy for buying us national championship rings. You know, he didn't have to do that. I'm sure that came out of his pocket, which I still have to this day. So, I mean, all those back then, my refereeing career, I mean, everything in my life has been great. My wife now, my little guy, everything's been good in the world.
Hey, nothing wrong with that. So tell me, before we go, tell me a couple of stories of life on the road as an official.
Okay, well, that came abrupt. life on the road as an official. Well, there's two linesmen and a referee. They figured out at a young age for me that I was not a linesman. For one reason or another. So they said, "You're a referee, Fish." And I said, "Okay, let's go." That was Monticelli back then, you know. He said, "You know, you're going to ref. You're not going to be a linesman." I said, "Okay, wherever you want me." So life on the road as a referee, it's very lonely. I will give you that, right? Linesmen usually travel together. Back then, I traveled alone. So a lot of hotel rooms, a lot of traveling after games, and it's all alone, right? You travel to the next city, you stay there till the game, you try to find a bite to eat, maybe hit the gym, you try to stay in good shape. You're on the ice for the whole time, unlike the players. You know, there's only five people on the ice the whole time, the three officials and the two goalies. So you try to stay in fairly good shape. I was in pretty good shape back then in my 20s. And so life on the road, there's a lot of stories, Mick, that we could talk about off the air, but it was a crazy, crazy journey traveling from different city to different city, trying to sightsee a little bit, right? But you don't want to get too tired before the game, try to take, a nap in the afternoon and then get ready for the game at night. The people that I met along the way in officiating, just like the people I met in Toledo, just unbelievable people. I mean, the hockey community is so small, and the people that you meet from city to city is just amazing.
Okay. Where were your favorite places to officiate?
Ooh, that's a great question, Mick. Yeah, it's tough to say. I would have to go back to the USHL days, Lincoln, Nebraska, being one that just blow your socks off if you ever get to watch a game in like Lincoln, Nebraska. Waterloo, Iowa, great, great facility there. In the pros, back in the day, you know, a city like Rockford, Illinois, was in the United Hockey League back then. Now they're in the American Hockey League. Quad Cities, I ref a lot in. And then the cities in Texas, some of those, crazy to believe, Texas, they love their hockey down there. Mm-hmm. It's just crazy. Probably the craziest league I ever did was the Western Hockey League, which is, like I said earlier, which is major junior in Canada on the West Coast over there. Cities like Portland, Oregon, and Seattle Now Seattle's getting an NHL team. Back then it was juniors. That's a different beast over there. Us over here in the Midwest, we don't really know. Like, that is different hockey over there. A lot of those guys go right out of major junior into the NHL. So it's a lot of great cities along the way. A lot of great crowds back then. You know, the chants they used to come up with my name on my back would say fish on my back, and the chants they would get started. And it was great, man. It was something I'll never forget in my life.
Yeah, I don't blame you there. Well, before we wind her up here, what would you say is, aside from the national championship, whether it was as a player or as a referee, what was the greatest memory you have in hockey, aside from the national championship?
Oh boy, that's another good question. In any of my the greatest, wow, that's tough, man. I would have to say winning the national, that you can't say not that, right? I remember that night we all got together for pizza. We were drinking out of the cup. We had some stogies we were smoking. I mean, it was just amazing after that, right? I guess the next memory that I remember was, like I said, I came from a football school, and they weren't happy that I had left to go play hockey. This was my senior year. I had came back and graduated at a school called Jimtown High School, and they had ended up winning the state football championship.
Wow.
And so I had came back in April or whenever, right after Nationals, and I wore my national championship gold thing around your neck,
The medal.
the medal, to school that next day. And I think my parents had maybe sent flowers, or not flowers, but balloons to school. And the other guys that played football there were like, "Oh, what do you think you are?" I go, "I won a national championship. I didn't win a state championship. You guys try to play all the best teams in the country and see how you do."
Wow.
So then I ended up graduating that year from school, and a lot of people were not happy that I went away to play hockey. But like I said about an hour ago, the two best coaches I ever had in my life were a guy named Bill Sharp and Scott Searing. This Bill Sharp was the football coach for Jimtown, and he said, "Do what you think is right for you, whether it's leave to go play hockey or stay here to play football." So he actually understood me, and he ended up being, again, one of the best two coaches in anything that I ever played. So.
That's pretty darn awesome. Okay, well, let's finish here with this then. I always finish this the podcast the same way, and that is to allow to have you whatever you want to say to Cherokee Nation, the fans, the current players, alumni players, coaches, you name it, they all listen, and we're grateful for that. And just a chance for you to, say whatever's on your mind as far as in regards to addressing the Toledo Cherokee faithful.
Yep. Thanks, Mick. I think I've already said it all. That the years I was there probably produced the man that I am today. Obviously the coaching staff had a big deal in that. Scott Searing, love you to death. He had the most integral part of that. And then the other coaching staff, Omi, love all these guys to death. Ludwig and Witten there towards the end of my career there. And then from the back office, from the McCarthys to the LeMays to the Renegers, and then to the housing staffs at the houses that I stayed in, everybody top notch. I would say probably the best junior program in the country. I could say that pretty heartily because I've been to a lot of these different cities in my refereeing career, and it's just a class act there. I think they still hang the national championship banner. I need to get over there and see that and take my family to see that. Hopefully there's an alumni skate or something coming up in the near future. I'd love to get out there to one of those.
Yep.
And Mick, you along the way, just a class act, and keep doing what you're doing here. This is awesome. And yeah, I appreciate everything that Toledo has done for me to make the man that I am.
Well, I tell you what, I took a young kid to buy in. You know, that young boy from Elkhart, Indiana, who bought in to even if it meant not always getting on the dress list or not always getting the playing time he wanted, but still bought in and fought for everything he had and was willing to help others get there along the way. And he wore number 7 and is not only a national champion, but just a pretty doggone good dude that has done a lot of good for not only the game of hockey, but in life. So my brother, I thank you for doing this. And hey, you know, we will talk again. It won't be so long, I promise, because like I said, we've always got that link of a national championship. But you know, not only that, but the fact that, you know, you're just a flat out good guy, and we need to chat more. And I promise you that we're gonna whenever we get to whatever normal is here in this world, we are going to have a reunion, and that will involve an alumni game, I'm sure. So we will have that done, because I want us to all get together and watch the current Cherokee play, watch a game, and have a couple of Diet Dr. Peppers or whatever, and throw those down while we're watching a game and telling tales and laughing our butts silly. Because I want them to hear us laughing so hard they're gonna look and go, what's going on, man? They should be watching the game, you know. And we'll be giving each other so much crap, but that's what it is, man. That's what it's about. So, yep. But thank you for doing this, and you know, we'll talk again, I'm sure. So thanks.
All right. Thanks, Mick. Take care.
Yep. You too. This has been episode 103 of the Cherokee Rewind. Thanks to Adam Fish for doing this. Don't forget, please subscribe, and you can subscribe to any platform that you download your podcast from, and just put in Cherokee Rewind and subscribe. And every time a new episode drops, it will let you know. So for number 7, Adam Fish, I am Mick saying so long. We'll catch you next time right here on the Cherokee Rewind.